A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants to talk fineliners. Those precision pens architects and technical writers treat like surgical instruments. He's asking three things. What widths map to which real-world applications? Which brands actually deliver on quality? And whether there's a refillable option for people who don't want to keep throwing plastic pens in the trash? And honestly, this is the kind of question where most people get it wrong before they even start. You're drafting a floor plan. The wall thickness needs to be 0.3 millimeters. Your pen is 0.7. That's not a preference. That's a mistake.
That mistake compounds fast. A contractor reads a 0.7 line as a structural wall, not a partition. Suddenly, your framing budget is wrong by thousands of dollars. Architects aren't being precious about this. Line weight is literal communication.
Which is why I've always found it funny that most stationery aisles just throw fineliners in a rack next to gel pens and glitter markers. No distinction, no guidance. The 0.5 Sakura Micron, hanging next to a scented highlighter shaped like a unicorn.
The unicorn to precision ratio is way off in retail, so let's get specific. What exactly is a fineliner? It's a pen that uses water-based pigment ink delivered through a plastic or fiber tip encased in a metal ferrule, that little metal collar at the business end. Nib widths typically range from 0.1 millimeters to 1 millimeter, with some outliers on both ends. The key differentiator from a rollerball is the ink type. Rollerballs use gel or liquid ink, fineliners use pigment suspended in water. From a fountain pen, it's the nib construction. No tines, no flex, just a consistent cylindrical or conical tip. And from a traditional technical pen like the old Rotring Rapidograph, it's about maintenance. True technical pens have tubular nibs with a wire inside to regulate flow. Fineliners are sealed units, they just work until they don't.
Define until they don't. What's the failure mode?
Two main ones. First, the tip mushrooms, the plastic or fiber flattens and spreads under pressure, so your 0.3 line becomes 0.5. You don't notice until you hold a new pen next to the old one, and the line weight difference is obvious. Second, the ink dries out in the tip if the cap doesn't seal perfectly. Once that happens, the pen is dead. There's no reviving a dried fineliner tip the way you can flush a fountain pen.
The cap is actually a critical component, not just something you lose under the desk.
A bad cap seal can kill a fineliner in weeks. Staedtler's pigment liners have a double seal cap that clicks twice. It's genuinely functional engineering, not marketing. Microns have a friction fit cap that works well when new but loosens over time. I've killed more microns by losing the cap during a sketching session than I care to admit.
This is the part where someone listening says, "It's just a pen." But you just described a precision instrument where the failure of a 2-cent plastic cap ruins the entire thing.
The Rapidograph patent from Rotring in 1953 established this whole category, and it was originally designed for drafting, for producing technical drawings where line weight had legal and contractual implications. A 0.3 millimeter line on an architectural drawing means something specific. The modern fineliner market really took off in the 90s with the Staedtler pigment liner and the Sakura Pigma Micron, which democratized pigment ink in a disposable format. Suddenly, you didn't need to clean a technical pen with solvents and a wire brush. You just uncapped and drew.
The history is basically precision instruments for professionals. Then the disposables made the technology accessible to everyone, but at the cost of some quality and a lot of plastic waste. Which brings us to the first real question. What do you actually use each one for?
Let me give you the mapping, and then we'll talk about the ISO standard that governs this in architecture. 0.1 to 0.2 millimeters, that's hatching and cross-hatching territory. When an architect is doing a rendered elevation, those hairline strokes create texture and shadow without overwhelming the drawing. 0.05 exists. Staedtler makes one, but it's fragile to the point of being impractical for most work. The tip will scratch paper if you're not impossibly light-handed. It's really only for micro details on circuit board schematics or for stippling in scientific illustration.
0.05 is basically a flex for people who want to prove they can draw on a grain of rice.
It's the fountain pen equivalent of a needlepoint nib. Technically impressive, practically limited. The real workhorse range is 0.3 to 0.5 millimeters. 0.3 is the standard for primary line work in most floor plans and elevations. It's thin enough to be precise, thick enough to be visible at scale. 0.5 is for outlines, the outer perimeter of a building footprint, the heavy line that says this is the boundary. 0.7 to 1 millimeter is for bold annotations, title blocks, section markers, the visual hierarchy that makes a drawing readable at a glance.
There's actually an international standard for this.
ISO 128. It specifies line widths for technical drawings using a square root of two progression, 0.13, 0.18, 0.25, 0.35, 0.5, 0.7, and 1.0 millimeters. The idea is that each step is visually distinct from the next. The square root of 2 ratio means the line area doubles every two steps. It's the same principle as paper sizes like A4 to A3. Beautiful mathematical logic behind it.
Which, of course, most fineliner brands ignore entirely for marketability.
Sakura Micron skips 0.13 and 0.18 entirely. They do 0.2, 0.3, 0.5, 0.8. Staedtler is closer to the standard but rounds for convenience. The purists, and I've met them on architecture forums, will only use Rotring Isograph pens because they come in the exact ISO widths. 13 nib sizes from 0.1 to 2.0 millimeters, every single one matching the standard.
There are architecture forums where people argue about this.
There are architecture forums where people have been arguing about this since the 90s. It's beautiful. The purist position is that if your line weights don't follow the square root of 2 progression, your drawing doesn't photocopy or scan correctly at different scales. A 0.35 line reduced to 50% becomes 0.25, which is still a standard width. A 0.3 line reduced to 50% becomes 0.15, which isn't standard and might not reproduce cleanly.
That's fascinating. The standard exists so the drawing survives reduction. It's not arbitrary.
Not arbitrary at all. And this is where the misconception comes in that all fineliners are the same because they all draw thin lines. The width tolerance on a Sakura Micron is plus or minus about 15% of nominal. On a Rotring Isograph, it's closer to 5%. For a journaling habit, who cares? For a drawing set going to a contractor who's pouring concrete based on your dimensions, it matters.
Let's talk about ink chemistry, because that's the other half of, they're not all the same.
This is where things get interesting. Fineliners use pigment ink, specifically carbon black pigment suspended in water with a polymer binder. The pigment particles are typically 20 to 50 nanometers in diameter. They sit on the surface of the paper rather than soaking in. Dye-based inks, what you get in a cheap felt tip, dissolve into the paper fibers. That's why they bleed through and fade in sunlight.
The carbon black is literally soot, isn't it?
High-grade carbon black, processed to uniform particle size. The Sakura Micron uses Pigma ink, which is ISO 12757-2 certified for archival permanence. That certification means it's rated for over 200 years of fade resistance under museum storage conditions. The pigment is chemically inert. It doesn't react with paper acids, doesn't oxidize, doesn't break down under UV. The binder might yellow over decades, but the line itself stays.
200 years. So a Micron drawing from today will outlast basically everything else on the desk.
Outlast the desk. Outlast the building it's stored in, probably. Compare that to a dye-based fineliner from a budget brand. You'll see visible fading within 5 years if it's exposed to indirect sunlight. Direct sunlight, you're looking at months. I've seen sketches taped to a studio window where the dye ink was completely gone after a single summer.
That's the difference between I'm jotting a grocery list and this drawing needs to exist in 2036.
And the waterproofing is another dimension. Pigment ink sits on top of the paper. Once the water evaporates, the pigment and polymer binder form a film that water can't redissolve. Dye ink will reactivate if it gets wet. If you're an urban sketcher adding watercolor washes over your line work, you need pigment ink or your lines will bleed into the wash and ruin the whole piece.
Which brings us to nib durability, because even the best ink is useless if the tip turns into a mushroom.
The mushrooming problem. This is the most common failure mode and the biggest differentiator between brands. A fineliner tip is either plastic, usually polyacetal or nylon, or fiber, which is typically polyester fibers bound with resin. Plastic tips are extruded and ground to shape. Fiber tips are essentially compressed and shaped bundles. When you draw, the friction against the paper gradually wears down the tip. With a plastic tip, the wear tends to be uneven. The edges abrade faster than the center, creating a flattened mushroom shape. Your 0.3 becomes 0.4, then 0.5.
How fast does that happen?
On a Sakura Micron continuous use, meaning actual drawing time, not just being uncapped, you'll see noticeable line widening after about 5 hours. The Staedtler pigment liner uses a fiber tip with a harder resin binder, and that typically lasts around 8 hours before mushrooming becomes visible. The Rotring Isograph uses a tubular metal nib. It's essentially a tiny metal tube with a wire inside that regulates ink flow. That doesn't mushroom at all. It can clog, it can bend if you drop it, but the line width stays consistent for the life of the pen.
The disposable brands are on a spectrum, and the refillable tubular nib is in a different category entirely. Let's do the brand breakdown properly. You've handled basically every fineliner worth talking about.
Let's go through them with prices and trade-offs because the differences matter at the margin. Sakura Pigma Micron, the industry standard, about $2.50 per pen, 8 widths from 0.2 to 0.8 millimeters. Pigment ink, archival certified, widely available. The downsides, plastic tip that mushrooms, the cap seal degrades over time, and the ink flow can be inconsistent in the last third of the pen's life. It's the Toyota Corolla of fineliners. Reliable, ubiquitous, not exciting.
The pen everyone has owned at least three of.
Staedtler pigment liner, about $2.80, 9 widths including the 0.05 millimeter. Fiber tip with better durability, double seal cap that actually works, and the ink is slightly blacker than the Micron, higher carbon loading. The downside is that if the cap isn't fully seated, the tip dries out faster than a Micron because the fiber wicks moisture more aggressively. I've lost more Staedtlers to cap failure than tip wear.
The better cap seal is also a vulnerability. It works great until the user doesn't click it all the way, and then it punishes you.
It's a precision system that demands precision from the user. The Rotring Isograph. This is the gold standard for architects, about $25 per pen, refillable tubular metal nib, 13 widths from 0.1 to 2.0 millimeters, uses ink cartridges or a converter. The line is absolutely consistent, the ink flow is adjustable by twisting the nib collar, and the pen will last decades if maintained. The catch, it requires cleaning. If you leave it unused for more than a week, the ink dries in the tubular nib and clogs it. Cleaning involves disassembly, flushing with water or a cleaning solution, and sometimes using a fine wire to clear the channel. It's a commitment.
The Isograph is like adopting a feral cat. Rewarding, but you can't just ignore it for 2 weeks and expect it to be fine.
That's exactly the right analogy. It rewards consistent attention and punishes neglect. The Copic Multiliner, about $3.50, 8 widths, and the key feature is alcohol-resistant ink. Illustrators who use Copic markers for coloring need this. Standard pigment ink will bleed or lift when alcohol marker is applied over it. The Multiliner ink is specifically formulated to resist that interaction. The nibs are replaceable on some models, which is unusual in the disposable category. The downside is that the ink isn't as archivally stable as Micron or Staedtler. It's optimized for marker compatibility, not permanence.
Then there's UniPen, which I feel like nobody talks about.
UniPen is the underrated pick. About $2.20, excellent fade resistance. Uni Super Ink is actually really good, but the width range is limited. You get 0.1, 0.3, 0.5, 0.8. No 0.05, no 0.2. If those four widths cover your needs, it's the best value on the market. The tip durability is comparable to Staedtler, and the ink is deeply black. Uni just doesn't market them as aggressively as Sakura.
The stationary equivalent of the band you saw in a basement venue before they got big, except they never got big, and that's fine.
They're perfectly happy playing the basement. Now, the refillable question is where things get really interesting, because there's a genuine tension between cost, convenience, and environmental impact that doesn't have a clean answer.
Lay out the numbers, because I think most people assume refillable always wins.
Let's do the math. A disposable fineliner, say a Staedtler pigment liner, costs about $2.80. A heavy user might go through 12 pens a year, which is about $34. A Rotring Isograph costs $25 up front, plus about $8 per year for ink cartridges. First year, $33. Second year, $8. The break-even is around 18 months. After that, the Isograph is saving you money.
The cost argument for refillable is real, but it's a long game play. 18 months is a while.
That's for a daily user. If you're using fineliners once a week for journaling, you might go through 3 or 4 pens a year. At that rate, the break-even stretches to 4 or 5 years, and by then you might have lost the pen or dropped it nib down on a concrete floor, which, by the way, will ruin a tubular nib instantly. The environmental argument is actually stronger than the cost argument. A single disposable fineliner contains about 0.5 gram of plastic and 0.2 milliliters of ink. With roughly 50 million fineliners sold annually in the U.S. alone, that's 25 tons of plastic waste. A refillable Isograph used for 5 years replaces about 60 disposable pens, reducing plastic waste by roughly 90%.
25 tons of plastic pens going into landfills every year, just in the U.S. That's a lot of mushroom tips.
The plastic in fineliners is typically a mix of polypropylene for the barrel, polyacetal for the tip, and metal for the ferrule. It's not easily recyclable because separating those materials at scale is impractical. Most of them end up in general waste. The EU's Single-Use Plastics Directive currently exempts pens, but there's discussion about revising that by 2028. If that happens, the economics of disposable fineliners change dramatically.
The regulatory landscape might force the refillable transition that the market hasn't made on its own. What else is out there beyond the Isograph?
The Lamai Scribble is interesting. It's technically a mechanical pencil, but Lamai does make a ballpoint version, and there's a fine liner style refill system in the Lamai M66 cartridge format. It's about $30, available in 0.35 and 0.5 millimeters. The nib isn't tubular like the Isograph. It's more like a reinforced fiber tip that's designed to be replaced as a cartridge unit. Less maintenance than the Isograph, but the line consistency isn't quite as precise.
There's the Co-I Nor Rapidograph, which is still being manufactured.
Still in production, but supply chain issues in early 2026 have made them harder to find in the U.S. Co-I Nor is the original Rapidograph manufacturer. They licensed the Rotring patent back in the 50s and have been making them ever since. Their Rapidograph is functionally identical to the Rotring Isograph, same tubular nib, same maintenance requirements, slightly cheaper at about $20 per pen. The catch is parts availability. Replacement nibs and cleaning kits have been spotty this year.
There's also this emerging hybrid category that I think is worth mentioning. Pens that use fountain pen ink, but have fineliner style nibs.
The Platinum Carbon pen is the standout here. It's a desk pen, long body, no clip, designed to sit in a pen holder, about $15. It uses platinum carbon ink cartridges, which are pigment-based, waterproof, and archival. The extra fine nib writes at roughly 0.3 millimeters. It's not technically a fine liner, it has fountain pen tines, but the line weight and ink behavior are close enough that many illustrators use it as a fine liner substitute. The advantage is that it uses standard fountain pen cartridges or converters, so your ink options are vast. The disadvantage is that it's a fountain pen nib, so it has feedback and flex characteristics that a true fine liner doesn't.
Flex is not what you want for technical drawing. You want dead consistency.
A fine liner should be boring. It should produce exactly the same line every single time. A fountain pen nib, even a rigid one, introduces variation. For illustration, that's a feature. For architectural drafting, it's a bug.
Build me a chair nobody notices they're sitting in. That's the fine liner design brief. The pen should disappear into the line.
That's beautifully put. And it's why the most interesting development in this space is a small German company called Schreiberette. They've developed what they call a fine liner converter, an adapter that lets you fit standard fountain pen converters into fine liner nib units. It's not widely available in the U.S. as of May 2026, but the idea is compelling. Use any fountain pen ink you want in a true fine liner tip. The early reviews say the flow control isn't perfect. Fine liner tips are designed for a specific ink viscosity, and fountain pen inks vary wildly.
It's a hack that works about 70% of the time, which in the precision drawing world means it doesn't work.
If your line skips during a dimension line, you've ruined the drawing. That 70% reliability might be fine for a shopping list, but for a floor plan going to a contractor, it's unacceptable. Which brings us to the real decision framework. Who should buy what?
Let's do this properly. Occasional user. Journaling, note-taking, the old sketch.
Staedtler Pigment Liner. Best durability to price ratio, the double seal cap keeps the pen alive between uses, and the widths are close enough to standard for non-technical work. Buy a 3-pack of your most used width, probably 0.3 or 0.5, rather than a full set. You'll spend about $8 and be set for months.
Daily Illustrator or Urban Sketcher.
This is where it gets interesting. If you're using Copic markers, the Copic Multiliner is the obvious choice for alcohol resistance. If you're doing watercolor washes, the Sakura Micron or Staedtler, both are waterproof. But if you're sketching daily and burning through 2 or 3 pens a month, the Rotring Isograph starts making real sense. The line consistency alone is worth it for professional work. You'll need to commit to cleaning it every 2 to 3 weeks. Flush with lukewarm water, never alcohol-based cleaners, because they dissolve the nib binder. It's a 5-minute ritual.
Architect or engineer producing technical drawings.
Rotring Isograph, no question. The ISO standard widths, the adjustable ink flow, the line consistency over decades. Buy the 3 widths you use most, probably 0.13, 0.25, and 0.5, rather than a full set. You'll spend about $75 up front, but those pens will outlast your career if maintained. The cleaning is non-negotiable. If you can't commit to that, the Staedtler Pigment Liner is the fallback. Except that you'll be replacing pens and dealing with slight line weight drift.
Someone who just wants to reduce plastic waste but isn't a heavy user.
This is the hardest category, honestly. The environmental argument for refillable is strong, but if you're using 3 pens a year, the break-even is so far out that the upfront cost feels punishing. My honest recommendation, try the Platinum Carbon pen with carbon ink cartridges. It's $15, the ink is archival and waterproof, and you're only throwing away small cartridges rather than entire pens. It's not a true fineliner, but it gets you most of the way there with less waste. If you love it, graduate to the Rotring Isograph.
That's the gateway drug model of stationary recommendations.
Start them on the desk pen. They'll be cleaning tubular nibs within 18 months. It's a pipeline.
Let me ask the question. I think a lot of people have, but don't articulate. Is thinner always better for precision work? Because I see people gravitating towards 0.1 and 0.05 thinking they're getting more precision.
This is one of the biggest misconceptions. Thinner is not always better. A 0.1mm nib is fragile. It will scratch paper if your hand pressure isn't absolutely perfect, and the line is so fine that at standard drawing scales it becomes nearly invisible. 0.3 is the practical minimum for most technical drawings. Using too thin a nib actually reduces precision because you can't see the line clearly while you're drawing it. You end up going over it twice, which creates a messy double line.
The 0.05 is basically a party trick.
It's for showing off. Circuit board schematics, micro stippling, and scientific illustration, the kind of work where you're using a magnifying lamp anyway. For 99% of users, it's the wrong tool. The other thing people don't realize is that line visibility is a function of contrast, not just width. A 0.3 line in black pigment ink on white paper is more visible than a 0.5 line in gray dye ink on cream paper. The ink chemistry matters as much as the width.
The paper matters too.
Fine liners perform best on smooth sized paper. The sizing prevents the ink from bleeding into the fibers. Rhodia, Clairefontaine, Leuchtturm, these are the standards. Moleskine paper is inconsistent. Some batches work fine, others bleed through like newsprint. If you're doing technical work, use a paper specifically designed for it. Bristol board for illustration, vellum or tracing paper for drafting overlays. The pen is half the system.
Let's talk about a care tip that I think most people don't know.
Store fine liners horizontally. If you store them tip down, gravity pulls the ink toward the tip and can cause pooling, which leads to blobbing when you first uncap. Tip up, and the ink drains away from the tip, causing hard starts. Horizontal storage keeps the ink evenly distributed in the feed channel. For refillable pens like the Isograph, this is even more critical. Storing tip down can flood the tubular nib and cause drips.
The cleaning protocol for refillables. You mentioned lukewarm water. Why not hot?
Hot water can warp the plastic components and cause the nib collar to loosen. Lukewarm water with a tiny drop of dish soap if the ink is really stubborn. Flush until the water runs clear, then let the components air dry completely before reassembling. Never use alcohol-based cleaners. They dissolve the resins that bind the fiber tips and can crack plastic barrels over time. Isopropyl alcohol is the silent killer of good pens.
The silent killer of good pens. That's the name of your next DJ set.
I've been looking for a title. But seriously, the maintenance barrier is the reason most people bounce off refillable technical pens. They buy an isograph, use it for 3 weeks, forget to clean it, it clogs, and they go back to disposables feeling like they wasted $25.
Which is why the honest recommendation matters. Don't sell people on the refillable dream without telling them about the cleaning ritual.
The cleaning is the price of admission. If you can't stomach it, the disposables are a perfectly reasonable choice. Just buy the good ones and accept that you're trading convenience for waste. The worst outcome is buying an expensive refillable pen that sits in a drawer clogged with dried ink.
The pen graveyard. Every illustrator has one.
I have 3 isographs in various states of neglect that I'm not proud of.
To pull this together, with selection, brand choice, refillable versus disposable, what's the one-sentence framework?
Match the width to the task with 0.3 as your default. Buy Staedtler if you're occasional, and Rotring if you're daily, and only go refillable if you're willing to clean the pen every 3 weeks. If that last part sounds like a deal breaker, don't feel bad about disposables. Just buy the ones with archival ink and store them horizontally.
The width cheat sheet. Quick and memorable. 0.1 for hatching and micro details. 0.3 for standard line work. 0.5 for outlines. 0.7 and up for bold annotations. Buy a 3-pack of your most used width, not a full set. The 12-pen sets look nice on a desk, but you'll use 3 of them and the other 9 will dry out.
The full set is the stationary equivalent of buying a gym membership in January. Aspirational, rarely used, quietly judgmental.
I want to touch on one more thing before we wrap. The digital question. Apple Pencil, Wacom tablets, the whole analog versus digital tension in architecture and illustration. Is the fineliner dying?
It's not dying, but it's shifting. Younger architects are doing more work digitally. The Apple Pencil with Procreate or Morfolio Trace gives you pressure sensitivity and undo, which a fineliner never will. But there's a counter trend of analog tools persisting precisely where tactile feedback matters. Urban sketching has exploded in the last decade. It's a reaction against screens. Calligraphy and hand lettering are thriving. High-end drafting firms still produce hand-drawn presentation drawings because clients perceive them as more valuable than digital renders.
The hand-drawn line communicates something that the vector path doesn't.
It communicates human presence. A perfectly uniform digital line reads as sterile. A fineliner line has microscopic variation. Slight changes in ink density, tiny deviations in width, that your brain reads as a person made this. It's the same reason vinyl records persist in a world of lossless streaming. The imperfection is the signal.
The imperfection is the signal. That's a good place to land. The question I'll leave hanging, will the refillable market actually grow, or will environmental regulations force it? The EU Single-Use Plastics Directive exempts pens for now, but by 2028 that could change. If it does, the economics of the entire fineliner industry shift overnight.
The brands that survive will be the ones that have refillable systems ready to scale. Rotring, Lamy, Platinum. They're positioned for that transition. Sakura and Staedtler are going to have to adapt or lose the market. It'll be fascinating to watch.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The Allende meteorite, which fell over Mexico in 1969, contains a mineral called panguite, a titanium oxide previously unknown in nature, that was identified in a research paper whose original manuscript, typed on a Smith Corona electric typewriter, includes a handwritten margin note reading, "Check Drake Passage sample for comparison," referring to a deep-sea sediment core collected during a 1972 oceanographic expedition.
The margin note is the detail that got me.
Of course it is.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumentop. If you enjoyed this deep dive, rate us 5 stars and tell a friend who still uses a 0.7 for everything.
They know who they are.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
They thanks for listening to our show. My weird prompts where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.